You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Everybody, welcome into another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat early on this Tuesday, the Rockets are coming off a 125-96 loss to the LA Clippers at Staples Center just a few hours ago. Late game on the West Coast, TNT exclusive. The Rockets were actually close, led for much of the first half, but it spiraled out of control in a big way in the third quarter, outscored 36-12. And by the end of the game, it was just pretty much garbage time for both teams. You could tell the emphasis that the Rockets put on the game, which is not much. They're locked into the number three seed, now 54-27 on the year. So all the veterans with any kind of injury concern at all, Nene, Clint Capella, Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, none of the injuries considered serious. They're all just nicks, the kind of things that pretty much every player has after you've been through 80 regular season games. But the Rockets, in a unique position of these games not mattering, you can actually rest, whereas most players at this point in the year would just have to play through. So at least be thankful for that. In terms of the other guys, some very non-traditional guys got major minutes. Bobby Brown played 32 minutes. Isaiah Taylor and Troy Williams each played 24. Chinoni Onwuakwu got 21. Even your regulars like James Harden and Eric Gordon only played 24. The only regular who got his usual run would be Trevor Ariza at 36 minutes, and that's largely because he sat out Sunday in Sacramento. So I think he was fresh and he wants to round into postseason form. So Mike D'Antoni left him out there. I think part of it, too, you kind of have a stabilizing veteran influence with so many young players. Now, Bobby Brown isn't young, but, well, he's still young in the context of NBA experience. So I think they wanted Trevor Ariza as kind of a veteran mentor out there. And also, with it being a back-to-back and him sitting out the front end, he wasn't as tired as the rest. So it made sense to let him go 36. Everyone else, just a very non-traditional game for the Rockets. They sat out the guys with any kind of nicks and dings. Nothing major on any of those guys. Beverly, Lou Williams, Nene, Clint Capella. Clint Capella had a very minor Achilles tweak. They said, I think Beverly, it's a shoulder, Nene, a hand. Most of it, though, it's nothing abnormal. This is what every NBA player has after 80 regular season games. The Rockets are just in a unique position at 54-27, the number three seed locked in, that they can actually try and rest them this final week of the year and get them as fresh as possible heading into the playoffs, which starts Saturday or Sunday against Oklahoma City. Now, as far as what actually happened against the Clippers, as I said, the Rockets led as late as the final moments of the second quarter, and then it got out of hand in a big way in the third quarter, 36-12. I actually think it's less about who the Rockets play and more about how they play. Because certainly on paper, you start James Harden, arguably the MVP of the NBA, alongside Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and you'll have a chance to win most games. But it's not about the guy sitting out so much as it's about how the Rockets played or didn't play. Because these last couple of games, you saw it Sunday in Sacramento too, they just happened to make enough shots that it didn't matter. The fact is, the objective for the Rockets, and everyone knows it, don't get hurt. And so when you don't get hurt, what happens? You're trying to avoid contact. You don't want to get very physical. And so where it really takes a toll is on the defensive end and on driving to the bucket. Quite simply, these games for the Rockets, they look like all-star games from the level of effort because, well, in all-star games, you see players with the main objective of trying not to injure themselves so they don't go hard to the rim unless it's a wide open lane. And defensively, they tend not to put that much effort at all because those are the two areas that require the most physical exertion. And the Rockets, Sunday in Sacramento, they scored 135 points. They made enough threes that it wasn't really an issue. They still were able to win, even though defensively the Kings scored 128. We all saw the lapses. Monday in LA, that's a very desperate Clipper team. The Clippers are now 50-31. They've won six in a row. They're tied with the Jazz, but they do have the tiebreaker for the four seed in home court in the first round. So this was a game the Clippers absolutely had to win. They played like it. The Rockets, the main objective for them, don't get hurt, be fresh for the playoffs. Well, they played like it as well. Because when the Rockets play that way, it's going to come down to making threes. They made them on Sunday, and then on Monday, well, they were just 9 of 40. So they hung around in the first half, 57 points. But in the third quarter, they scored 12 points. Clippers still put up 36. And, well, you lose a quarter by 24 points in the NBA. You know how that's going to go. The Rockets were never going to win this game with defense because there's too much injury risk and locking in, so to speak, and playing that style of ball. They also, once things got out of hand, they weren't going to aggressively attack the rim and take a ton of contact because that's not really what you want to see either. So they're just going to come down to them staying hot from three. They did for a little bit. We saw both Bobby Brown and Troy Williams get hot in the first half, but they cooled off as the game went along, especially Bobby Brown, who finished just 6 of 15. Troy Williams did have a respectable 5 of 10, 15 points in his 24 minutes. But yeah, those guys came out very hot in late first, early second quarters. That's what allowed the Rockets to hang around. But eventually that was going to subside. It did. And once that happened, the Rockets it didn't make sense for them to play the style of defense or attacking the rim offensively to somehow try and get back in this game, considering it had zero relevance for them in the big picture. The Rockets got what they wanted out of that game, which was, no one got hurt. They went out there, they had a little bit of fun, they got some minutes to non-traditional guys, they got more tape on the likes of Montrezl Harrell, Troy Williams, even Chinadu Onuaku, who James Harden said after the game he wouldn't mind getting playoff minutes. As far as individuals, we touched on the end of the bench guys. It wasn't a banner night for your veterans, but in this kind of game, you wouldn't expect it to be. James Harden, 2 of 9, Eric Gordon, 5 of 13, Ariza, 3 of 11. This was not a game that's made for them. I know much is going to be made of James Harden because you never want to see your best player go 2 of 9, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 turnovers in his 24 minutes. But I thought James got his shots. I didn't see him grimacing. He didn't seem limited. He didn't maybe attack the rim with the vigor that he always does. But really, I'm not worried about it. I did not see the grimaces. I thought he got good shots. He just missed them. I think one thing I would worry about, the missed free throws. He did miss 5 of them, was 9 of 14 on the game. Good news, he started 5 of 9, so he made 4 of his final 5 at the line. I'm not going to worry about James from the free throw line. He goes through stretches like this. Fact of the matter is, when you have such a huge sample as he does, any little dip, which all players have at certain points of the year where they kind of fight their stroke and they have to get back in the lab, so to speak, and correct their form. Any dip especially stands out with James because he gets to the line so many damn times that whereas a normal guy, you might have one or two misses. That ends up being 4 or 5 for James because they come in bunches just because he gets to the line so frequently. We've seen it happen before. I really remember it in late November, the game at Detroit when he missed several down the stretch. On the year, he's still shooting 85% from the line, which is right in line with his career averages. I'm sure he'll figure it out. The good news is that free throws are the one area where really you don't even need game action. You can do that anywhere. And so the Rockets are going to have a lot of time off. They've got the season finale Wednesday against the Minnesota Timberwolves at home, and then you've got at least 2 days off before the playoffs start Saturday or Sunday. So he's going to have a lot of time in the gym. I'm sure he'll get it fixed. He always has. And as I said, he made 4 of his last 5 anyway. So I wouldn't worry about that from a free throw line. No, it wasn't an ideal game for him. But just the style of this and the lack of relevance, this was not an ideal game for your veterans in any way. In some senses, it was on Sunday against the Kings, because that's a young team, doesn't play a lot of defense. So if you're trying to play that all-star game style, as I said earlier, that might be a setting where it can work for a team like the Rockets. But this was a game in which the Rockets were on the road a second night of a back-to-back against a Clippers team, a veteran team that was desperate to win. And so when you have one team that's locked in doing all the little things, and you have the other who's playing, not to get hurt, and also working in a bunch of newbies for the first time, you're going to get results like this. It is what it is. I'm not worried about it in terms of, are they going into the playoffs on a down note? No. We've seen enough highs not to worry about that, and not to make a mountain out of a molehill, or in this case, one game with the likes of Bobby Brown and Isaiah Taylor playing major minutes. As far as the season finale against the Timberwolves on Wednesday at Toyota Center, D'Antoni said after the game that he might play the regulars for about 3 quarters. That kind of goes with what I expect. It's a game in which I don't think the Rockets really care about winning, but you can have certain stints where you treat it as a dress rehearsal. You don't want to go and have it be over a week without playing real basketball. In these two games, because it was a back-to-back setting, I think the Rockets rested even more than they normally would if the schedule was more balanced. That's why you saw all these veterans sitting out, and even guys that didn't have an obvious injury like Ariza in Sacramento taking the day off. It's a lot to ask at this point in the year. So I think what's going to happen, you will see your regulars play. You want to see them get a little bit of continuity before the Oklahoma City series. I think you'll see them go on an extended run in the first and third quarters, maybe for a large part of the second. And who knows, even the fourth if it's really close. But they're not going to take it that seriously. You don't want to play anyone more than, I'd say, 25, 30 minutes at the absolute most in certain circumstances because, you're not going to have much time. It could be as short as 2 days off before the playoffs start. But it is a good opportunity. These last two games, given the back-to-back settings and on the road, were not an ideal time for the Rockets to do it. But I think they'd like to get at least a few minutes where they're playing legitimate basketball with their regulars before the playoffs, treat it like a scrimmage. And so my guess is that's what they'll do. I also think Minnesota is not a bad team for them to go up against in terms of preparing for Oklahoma City, because we know how big Minnesota is. We know how they like to crash the glass. So in terms of getting ready for a team like Oklahoma City with Steven Adams, Enes Kanter, Taj Gibson, etc., playing a Tom Thibodeau team with a lot of size, a lot of athleticism up front, that's not a bad litmus test to see how these guys, like Clint Capela and Nene, assuming both of those guys return, are able to handle themselves in the finale. It will be limited minutes. I don't think you're going to see the Rockets completely lock in, because you're not going to see them risk significant injury or anything like that, but it could be a fun test for them. I think as far as setting up a game, you have a day off before. Of course, you have at least 2 days off after. You're playing a big team, one with a lot of athletes in the front court. I think it's a good circumstance for the Rockets, at least for small doses, to go out and try and get a little bit of rhythm going into the playoff series this weekend. Now, that's all I know to say about these last two games, because let's be real, they don't really matter for the Rockets. I'd love to see them get the final game to get to 55-27. That's a nice round number. But regardless, they're number three seed in the playoffs, so going up against the Oklahoma City Thunder in the playoffs, that's when it's really going to matter. If you want early playoff talk, go back to last Friday's episode with Brian Geltzeiler on Locked On Rockets right here. We broke down the X's and O's of how those teams match up. You can also go to sports790.com if you haven't already and read my column previewing the five keys for the Rockets in this series as I see them. And of course, later on in the week, we're going to have a lot more playoff talk as well. Right now, just trying to get through these last couple of games, break down what small bits and pieces we're learning from those, and then we'll fully embark on playoff matchup talk starting Thursday. As far as the rest of this podcast, taped in the aftermath of the Rockets losing 125-96 to the Clippers on Monday night, now falling to 54-27 on the year, still, of course, the number three seed in the Western Conference. Look, I'm going to address the elephant in the room, which is the MVP race, because I know a lot of folks are talking about it in the aftermath of Russell Westbrook's latest explosion, another 50-point triple-double, his third of the year Sunday, and of course gets to 50 on a miraculous 35-foot heave at the buzzer to win by one. Look, I'm not oblivious. I know I've said throughout the year that a lot of these voters take a bigger picture mindset, and as recently as last Friday, I was still fairly confident that James Harden would win. Look, I'm right there with you guys. I get the pessimism. My view hasn't changed. I think historically, voters reward winning. That's what the award should be about. It's not just an individual metric award. And I think Harden has by far the best case based on the value aspect of it and what he's meant for his teammates. However, in the last 2 weeks, it's just been absolutely comical how many of these situations that the Thunder shouldn't be in, but they found themselves needing rescued, and Russell Westbrook's clutch performance has been phenomenal. Now, to me, that doesn't build his MVP case all that much, because when you line up against a team like Orlando, Dallas, or even Denver, and you're a playoff team, which Oklahoma City is, what does that really mean in the grand scheme? They shouldn't have been trailing those games to begin with. So yes, it's great that his level of clutch play was such to sort of rescue them in the closing moments, but something was lacking from that team to be in those holes in the first place. And if the objective of the games is to win, which that's what it should be for anyone, I'm not going to give bonus points to, well, this team underachieved for 42 minutes, but then they just had a ridiculous 6-minute stretch to get past a team that they should have thoroughly beaten from the outset. No, when you're looking at the value component, what you're trying to do, any individual, which is lift his teams to wins, look, it's great that he did that, but you don't get bonus points for the style in which he's closed those games. You say, well, that's a nice win. He went out and played well. And, you know, certainly his numbers are enough to be an MVP candidate on their own merit. That's what disappoints me about all of this. There is no disrespect intended to Russell Westbrook. He's having a phenomenal season. He's great. These narratives about the clutch play and everything that we've seen lately, those are pulled out of context. And really, they do disservice to a guy who's a legitimate MVP candidate on his own merits. You don't have to give Russell Westbrook extra credit for these phenomenal clutch performances against terrible teams. You can say, look, he went out there and led his team to a win and played really well. The end. Nonetheless, I can see the writing on the wall. I see the way a lot of my peers in the journalism industry are looking at it, and in my opinion, it's a shame, but it is what it is. You're seeing a lot of guys get caught up in the memorable component of this. I think a lot of folks will agree that James Harden is probably more valuable, but the argument I'm seeing over and over again that I'm concerned now is going to win the day is whose season was more memorable. in 10 years? And I think that's kind of an artificial construct. I really hate that question because if you're an award voter, it's your job to contextualize. It's lazy to sit here and say, well, maybe Harden is more valuable, but this is the season that people are going to remember in 10 years. No, it's your job to do that. No doubt, I look back to, I think 11 years ago, I think it was the 2006 MVP campaign, the really close one between Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant. No doubt that Kobe Bryant had the more memorable season. That was when he scored 81 points. He was just a one-man machine. That was, of course, when Kobe was at his physical prime. It was after Shaq, but before Pau Gasol, so he basically got every shot in LA. No doubt that Kobe was a much more amazing individual player, and I will always remember his individual brilliance in those seasons. However, Steve Nash was voted as the MVP because of the impact he had leading his team, and I don't have a problem with that. Now, I think Harden's a much more deserving candidate than Nash was back then, but that's neither here nor there. The point is that the voters put it on themselves to contextualize. You know what? Yeah, Kobe Bryant's season is more memorable. It's incredible what he's doing, but it's your job to determine value. It's a cop-out to sit here and say, well, I think Harden has a compelling case, but this Westbrook season, that's the one we're going to be talking about in 10 years. So how is that vote going to age? I think that's absolutely lazy. I don't think that should be a primary consideration because in that, you're basically copping out and saying, well, because this is what people on Twitter are freaking out about and this is what whoever it is on First Take or any of the screaming debate shows on TV, this is what they're saying. So I'm just going to defer to them. That's kind of a cheap way of saying, you know what, I don't want to weigh in. I don't want to make a tough decision. So I'm going to just make them one that I can most easily defend on social media or on my internet column moving forward. I think that's a shame. However, we are starting to see it. It kind of feeds into what I was saying the other day. I was never that concerned that Westbrook was getting on Harden per se, but I think the problem in this, it's turned into a two-person race. When I was really optimistic about Harden, because his case is so strong overall, I never thought Harden was going to get an overwhelming percentage of the number one votes, but I thought it would be he would get a decent enough proportion that with the split four ways between Harden, Westbrook, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron James, you'd see Westbrook at three or four on a lot of ballots, and that would kind of provide the cover fire. Now that it's just between Westbrook and Harden, and it seems that it's pretty clearly a two-man race, everybody these days wants to be covered. So many of these voters, they don't want to make a hard stand. They don't want to upset a fan base. They don't want to upset a team. So there tends to be a little bit of kind of a mob forming, so to speak, because nobody wants to go out there on an island. And if there were four legitimate candidates, which I thought there would be as recently as two or three weeks ago, it's so easy to actually share your opinion because there's a lot of division. There's not this mob. However, now that it's a two-man race and the Westbrook voters are so loud, you're seeing a lot of folks, and it's a shame in my opinion, but it is out there, kind of taking the cop-out route and saying, well, I'm going to vote for Westbrook because people are just going to remember his season more. And as I said, it's a shame because that's kind of your job as a voter to contextualize. Don't put it on Twitter or the talking heads or anybody like that. It's your job to define value and to determine who the most valuable player of this season was. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't want criticism, and now that it's a two-man race and that Westbrook contingent is growing so quickly, I believed as recently as a few days ago that it was James Harden's award to lose, and as of today, I'm still not going to say that he 100% can't, but I'm not oblivious to what's going on. It has not been a great couple of weeks for him. I don't think necessarily should change the race that much. He would still be my MVP by a long shot, but unfortunately, this has been a comedic 2 weeks in terms of the luck to feed the Westbrook narratives in terms of how those Thunder games have gone down. And unfortunately, that is going to have a negative effect on Harden's chances. I won't say that he can't win, but I'm more pessimistic now than I have been at any point in the year. And it's unfortunate because, well, now there's only one game left in the regular season. If you want an optimistic note, though, I'll end the podcast with this. I really don't think the MVP is going to be as meaningful this year, period, based on the change that the NBA has made to how the award is given out. To me, by far, the NBA awards, have been the most valuable in sports over the years because they are handed out during the playoffs. They are a part of the ongoing narrative. When Steph Curry got his MVP the last 2 years, he takes it in front of a raucous crowd in Oakland, and it feeds the narrative, whether he succeeds or fails moving forward. That's a part of it. I think we all remember in 94 when Hakeem won the award in Houston and was presented it in front of just 16,000 screaming fans at the Summit, and the games afterward, the showering chants of MVP. what made those awards so valuable is that they are a part of the narrative and they feed what happens the rest of the playoffs, success or failure. The other example, 2007, when Dirk got the MVP, but the Mavs were shockingly beaten. That was the 67-win Mavs in the first round by the eighth-seeded Warriors. That's the flip side. I remember how embarrassing it was for Dirk to have that press conference when the season was over. That's what makes the NBA awards matter, is that they are intertwined in that season because they're given out in the middle of the playoffs, and so you have these awards being given out, and they coincide exactly with what you're seeing on the floor, and so there's just this immediate context to them. Whereas the NBA, the MLB and NFL awards given out after the year, they never feel as significant because, well, the narrative has already moved on to something else. What does it really matter at that point? So the NBA, they've made the change. We all know they're not announcing during the playoffs. They're going to do an award show on June 26th because everybody across any business out there, award shows are typically cheap and easy revenue. Everyone wants a slice of that pie, the drama, so to speak. But by then, the playoffs are going to be done. Guys, how many of you are really going to care about it at that point? If Harden and the Rockets beat the Thunder in the playoffs, are you really going to get that hot and bothered on June 26th? No. If they do that, everybody knows what really happened. Well, these two guys went up head-to-head. And, of course, your satisfaction with the Rockets season as a whole is going to depend on that and also what happens the next two rounds, presumably against San Antonio, and if they're fortunate enough to win, against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. That's what's going to determine how we're feeling on June 26th when that award gets handed out. And then beyond that, that's going to be after the draft. We're going to be gearing up for free agency on July 1st when you know Daryl Morey is going to be big game hunting like he always is. So really, when we wake up on June 27th, the day after the awards are handed out in that ceremony, it's going to be A, how did the Rockets do in the playoffs? Did they beat the Thunder? How deep did they get? Et cetera, et cetera. And B, what are they going to do in early July? Who are they going after? Are they in the mix for Blake Griffin, Gordon Hayward, whoever it may be, et cetera? It'd be nice for James Harden to win the award. I absolutely think he deserves it, and it's a shame if he doesn't. But big picture, it's not going to mean the same. And I think it's a shame, but if you're a Rockets fan, it might be a consolation at this point if Westbrook gets the award. Because, you know, as far as the narratives, it's not going to mean anything in the playoffs because it's not going to be handed out. And then as far as setting the narrative, I know I've said before, I've made the case, and this was before learning of the ceremony, that, well, winning the MVP, it goes a long way towards establishing Harden's credibility in the eyes of his peers, going big game hunting in free agency, et cetera, et cetera. Well, folks, what the Rockets do in free agency, it's going to be, in terms of the narrative for the franchise going in, it's going to be determined largely by the regular season performance, which we know is going to end with either 54 or 55 wins, number three in the West, and secondly, how they do in the playoffs. Do they get past the first round? How do they fare against the Spurs and Warriors, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of are the Rockets a destination, that more than whether Harden finishes first or second in an awards ceremony after the year on June 26th is going to determine just how successful the Rockets are in their endeavors in early July. So I know no one wants to say that the MVP is meaningless, but I do think that this year it's going to feel less relevant than it has in the past because it's not feeding, there's not that immediate gratification. It doesn't feed the narrative the way it always has been. That's what's made the MVP award unique in the NBA in the past, because all of these guys, it's correlated with winning. That's another argument for Harden, but again, that's neither here nor there in terms of this argument. It immediately feeds into it because those guys are typically still playing, they're on good teams, and so it feeds the debate going forward the remainder of the playoffs. Without it, it's kind of like the baseball award being handed out in November. What does it really mean? It's cool that Dallas Keuchel got the Cy Young Award in 2015, but big picture, did that really change your perception of his career? Was that really a big positive or negative if he had lost it? I don't think so. It's kind of cool, but it just doesn't have the same cachet as the MVP award has in the NBA, and I think a large part of that is because of how in the past those awards are so perfectly intertwined with the playoffs, with that ongoing narrative. So if you want a little bit of consolation, even if Harden doesn't win the award, I feel like going forward, and it's unfortunate because it's the NBA's decision, but I don't know if these awards are going to have quite the same meaning anyway, given the format in which they're being handed out. Anyway, that's enough MVP talk. Hope I didn't bum everyone out. I just felt obligated to discuss it because generally I've been an optimist on Harden's chances all year long. You guys know that. I'm being asked a lot on Twitter. I don't see a point in going out and being overly negative because, quite frankly, pessimism doesn't sell. If you go out basically expecting the world to screw you and just being overtly angry at the media, the voters, whoever it may be, there's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy to that, in my opinion. There's no point in going out there and just assuming the worst. you want to assume the best people, that they're open-minded. I like what the Rockets are doing, proactively searching out. Saw Tad Brown, the CEO, looking for an interview with Sam Amick. Sam Amick posted a podcast with Billy Donovan, the OKC coach, on why he thinks Donovan, that Westbrook should be the MVP. And Tad, a little snarky, of course, but being serious, offered to set up the same sort of interview with Mike D'Antoni about James Harden. It sounds like Sam's going to do it, which good for him. Sam Amick, USA Today, is one of the good ones. That's what they should do. But for the Rockets, yeah, you can see in the tweets from Daryl Morey, Tad, a few of the executives, yeah, there's a little bit of pessimism. They get it, but there's no point in dwelling on it and being overly negative until it's happened. You want to at least show some deference to the voters, give them the benefit of the doubt. But just between me and you, yes, I'm aware of what's happening. I hope it doesn't. I'm not going to say it's 100%. But yeah, I'm aware it is unfortunate. It's rather unlucky. In my eyes, Harden stole the MVP. What's going to happen with the vote? We'll wait until June 26th. But for now, no, I'm not as optimistic as I was even as late as the end of last week. So with that, I will leave it right there. Again, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Also email us, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Any questions, suggestions, or advertising inquiries if you'd like to be a part of this program moving forward. Again, Rockets lost last night, 125-96 in LA, largely meaningless game for Houston. Rockets now 54-27 on the year, locked into the number 3 seed in the Western Conference. They finished things up in a dress rehearsal of sorts, maybe a half dress rehearsal, let's call it, against the Minnesota Timberwolves on Wednesday at Toyota Center. That's the season finale. Hope to see some of you out there at Toyota Center for that one. And then, of course, I'll be talking with you about that and previewing the playoffs after the game here on Locked On Rockets. For now, enjoy your day.